The Atlantic hurricane season began June 1st and runs through the end of November. And so far, nothing. It's the quietest start to the season in 17 years. You can thank El Nino in part, but there's still a long way to go. And historically, some of the fiercest storms landed after early August. In just a moment, Bill Reed, the director of the National Hurricane Center, will join us to talk about the storm season so far and what we might expect and what we should do to prepare for hurricanes and other tropical storms. If you'd like to talk with the director of the National Hurricane Center, give us a call, especially if you live near the coast. The number 800-989-8255, and the email address is talk@npr.org. Joining us now from WLRN, our member station in Miami, is Bill Reed, director of the National Hurricane Center. Good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
My pleasure.
So it's been a slow year so far, as we just said. Why is that?
Well, I think it's somewhat a perceptional thing. We've been in an active pattern since the mid-90s, so we're used to having perhaps a lot more activity early in the season. But over the history that we have, the climatology on hurricanes, the average date of the first storm to reach hurricane strength is August 14th. And generally speaking, there's one or two named storms formed before early August. So we're not that far into the peak of the season yet to be saying it's a really slow season. A lot could happen between now and the end of October.
Well, what does El Nino have to do with hurricanes and the way they develop?
And the most common effect of an El Nino is to it's a warming out in the Pacific. And for most people say, now, what the heck has that got to do with the Atlantic Ocean way far away? But when the oceans are warm in the tropical Pacific, you get a lot more thunderstorms out over that area, and that brings air up into the upper levels of the atmosphere, and through some interaction with the overall flow, ends up with an increase in a westerly component of the wind over the Caribbean. And wind shear is anathema to hurricane development. So when the jet stream or the higher winds aloft are going from west to east across the Caribbean, we don't see development there. And that's pretty much the way it's been this year. There's just been little or nothing in the Caribbean to look at.
Now, I understand there is a storm brewing that may be the first named storm of the year. Is that right? Or what's happening? What's brewing?
Okay. And over the last week or so, the open waters of the Atlantic, almost on schedule, the so-called Cape Verde season, the waves coming off of Africa showed a little more character than earlier in the season. And we have a depression right now that's about a third of the way across from the Cape Verde Islands to the Caribbean Islands. That hasn't shown. In fact, it's actually weakened since it first developed and may or may not hold together. We're still watching on that one. And then another wave came off behind that one. It came off of Africa yesterday, and we're currently carrying it just south of the Cape Verde Islands and are carrying a high risk of that one becoming a tropical cyclone in the next day or so.
So I want to ask you to just remind us what El Nino is. We were talking about El Nino before, but maybe some people don't know what El Nino is.
Mm-hmm. El Nino is a name for an oceanographic phenomena where the tropical waters in the Pacific Ocean end up in a long band along the equator and north and just north and south of it to be a little bit above their normal average, which disrupts the weather patterns pretty much around the Pacific basin and some carryover with impacts into the Atlantic area. Mainly it's manifested in winter with storminess on our west coast, drought off of in parts of South America, shuts down the rainy season in the Caribbean, for example. And that's the primary thing with El Nino.
One other question about language. We're talking about the hurricane season, but we know that Taiwan and parts of Asia have been devastated by a typhoon. What is the difference between a hurricane and a typhoon?
Name and where it formed. A typhoon is a name that mostly anglicized from a Japanese definition of the tropical cyclones. But that's the name given to the systems that do form in the western Pacific from Guam westward on into Asia. There's usually on the order of twice as many storms in a season. That's the most active basin around the globe. And their season really never ends. They occur in any month of the season.
But as storms, they're basically the same then, you're saying?
Sure. The physical mechanism of a typhoon is identical to a hurricane.
Yeah. Now, how do you predict where a hurricane will go and what's going to happen to a hurricane?
Well, the key function is first one of the difficult tasks is to get one of these when we get a tropical wave, of which there may be somewhere on the order of 100 areas of disturbed weather that we call tropical waves during the hurricane season. And we have an average season, say, of somewhere between in the active period we're in now, 11 and 14, say, storms out of about 100. Now we've got to figure out which ones are going to develop. Once we've gotten a developed system, the process is the forecasters do a very intense diagnosis of the system. How big is it? How strong is it? The exact locations. That information gets fed into our ever more complex and powerful computer models that we're able to run. And that becomes the backbone of the forecast system. We diagnose, the models run a set of guidance for us, we interact with that guidance and then produce a forecast, which now goes out to 5 days where we have measurable skill in the track forecast and to some extent in the intensity, though we still have a long way to go on that.
Bill Reed is the director of the National Hurricane Center. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 800-989-8255. We're going to take a call now from Ed, who's calling from Parkland, Florida. Hi, Ed.
How you doing?
Good, thanks.
My house was built in 2003, and hurricane panels, when I put them up, especially on the second story, it locks my family in the house. And if there's a fire, unless they go down the stairs, they're not getting out. And I didn't know what type of enforcement or what type of rules applied here to, you know, I just was curious what you do to get out of your house when you put these panels up.
Yeah, that's an issue. In fact, that would be a question I would probably bring your experts in the fire department out and suggest, because it would be unique probably for every house, what the safest way to do that on. Myself personally, I was in a one-story house and I left a doorway as the last element to be closed off for the storm, so I had that way of egress.
So, Ed, you're saying you would put the panels up once the storm began, but then that would lock you in? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and then if there's another hurricane, which happened a couple of years ago, it was coming a couple of days later, it was a scare. Yeah, I left them up because it's, high getting on the ladder, taking them off and on. So I left them up along with the rest of my neighborhood. But, you know, the only way out is to get to those stairs, get down them, and out the front door.
Here's what I would, if I was in a two-story house with my family and I had the panels up, I would make it a camping trip and stay on the downstairs. Two reasons. One, the fire issue that you recognize. The second is the wind. The effect of the wind increases as you go up due to lack of less friction. So you're going to be better protected on your lower floors than your upper floors. You're safer in your lowest floor of your house in the event of the wind.
All right. Thanks so much for your call.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye. We're going to take a call from George, who's calling from Gainesville, Florida. Hi, George. You there?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a question that Dr. Reed about the hurricane prediction forecast, and it's really more of a concern. It seems like maybe not a lot of good seems to come from it. It doesn't appear that it's very correct every year. It has to be adjusted. And even if when it is close, I don't know of all the positives there are to gain from it. One of the biggest negatives that you see are the amount of turn to a state like Florida or even a place more like the Keys, where if they hear an unusually high number of storms being predicted, they may steer clear of vacationing in these areas that rely on tourism. And I just wanted to hear your thoughts about it, because I think there's other ways you can inform the public about being prepared for hurricanes other than making these predictions that don't ever really seem to be correct.
Well, there's several points to that question. I'm personally not the greatest fan of seasonal forecasts for a different reason. I think people take them as too explicitly as they are. And in fact, we at the Hurricane Center aren't the initiators of those.
Right.
Our area of expertise is on the short term. and did a little bit of sort of informal research sniffing around. I have not seen the reduction in predicted active years and people taking trips. In fact, I haven't even seen a whole lot of reduction when there's active weather going on of people taking trips. But what I'm more concerned about is when I hear officials, elected officials and whatnot, actually say, it looks like we're going to have a quiet season, and then I have to go and remind them that 1900 was a quiet season, and it wiped out Galveston. 1992, in fact, the first storm up was later than this year, and it was Hurricane Andrew. So the number of storms has no correlation with landfall and impact in the United States. So the main thing I use this for is, since it's out there, you're not going to take it away. It's a very potent entertainment value. The media are all over it, and quite a few people are putting them out. So they're not going to go away. And I do use that to emphasize the fact that it only takes one.
All right. Thanks so much for your call. Appreciate it. We're going to take a call now from Drew in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Drew.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Dr. Reed, I was wondering if you could speak a little bit to the most damaging aspects of hurricanes that you get. I mean, I know we have storm surges, there's wind, there's rain. Is there any one of those in particular that tends to be the most damaging factor of the hurricane on average? And, you know, what are some of the best tactics you can use to keep your house safe from those damages?
Well, from a dollar damage point of view, over time, wind has been the number one culprit on there, but it is actually storm dependent. You can have, for example, Tropical Storm Allison in 2001 was a minimal wind event. There was virtually no wind, no surge, yet several billion dollars in damage occurred from freshwater flooding. Flip the coin, you have Andrew, which was tens of billions of dollars damage, primarily due to wind. Then you have Katrina and Ike in very storm surge prone areas where there was quite a bit of surge damage. Surge, the only known way to protect from that is to not build in the surge zone, and we do that with regularity. With wind, a lot has been learned on how to build increase the resistance to wind of a house. It's very effective if used in a new house being built now, and Florida has a code that allows for that, and if it's done properly, will go a long way to protecting your family and your property inside. Other states, not so well yet, but that is the number one way to do that. Pre-existing houses, if you can cover your windows with good certified shutters that will prevent the wind from getting in, you've significantly increased its integrity in the event of a hurricane. That's the number one thing you can do to protect your house.
Bill Reed is the director of the National Hurricane Center, and you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And we're going to go to Honolulu, Hawaii now. Rose. Hi, Rose.
Hi. Yes, my question is, we just had a near brush with Hurricane Felicia, fell apart on our doorsteps, but do you think our state is more susceptible with global warming and El Nino happening? Thank you.
The studies by climate modelers is somewhat inconclusive on just how much impact the climate change is going to have on the frequency and strength of hurricanes, and more in the order of and how much the magnitude will change. The going process right now is that there'll be no more, maybe even less in numbers over a long period of time, and slightly stronger storms, but nothing alarmingly different. I think a more important impact to concern yourself on coastal areas and islands is how much of a sea level rise eventually occurs or not, depending on the degree of climate change and the effect on the polar regions.
You know, we've been hearing, obviously, from people who live near the coast, but if you live inland, how much do you have to worry?
Well, that's where the number one threat becomes. There is wind, loss of power, tree limbs coming down and the like, but the number one challenge for the inland locations is the torrential rains and the loss of life that occurs from the flooding of that. For example, what just happened over in Taiwan, with Hurricane Camille 40 years ago, as many people lost their lives in Virginia to flash flooding as on the coast.
So the people inland have to pay attention to these warnings as well. Bill Reed, thanks so much for being with us today. Bill Reed is the director of the National Hurricane Center, and he joined us today from member station WLRN in Miami, Florida. Coming up, we remember Les Paul. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Thank you.